Hi, my name's Neil Jackson. I played Marcus van Sciver on the Blade TV series, and you're listening to the Dead TV podcast.
Welcome back to the Dead TV Podcast, a podcast dedicated to all television shows on the sci-fi, fantasy, and horror genre. I am your host, Dr. Chris.
I am Chandra.
And tonight we're talking about Dark Crystal, Age of Resistance, Episodes 7 and 8.
Yes, so this 7 picks up right where we left off, which is where the Gelfling quest tribe was being flown across the desert on the back of one of their creatures to go to the Circle of the Suns. And poor Puck starts off with air sickness because the guy has really never done anything in his life. From there...
Yeah, the Circle of Suns, the weary travelers receive an unsettling surprise, and then Deet leads Rian on a harrowing journey through the tunnels of Thra. That's the plot synopsis for the two episodes. Time
yes.
to make my move, and prophets don't know everything. Hub, no, it opens up with Hub just like retching as the credits. I watch these episodes with the subtitles on. I'm not a big like subtitles person while I'm watching something, but when it comes to these characters' names or whatever, it's really helpful. Like I would not have known the name of the Skeksis, you know, that they meet later on, the friendly Skeksis.
the crazy one?
Yeah, the crazy one. But, like, you know, it just, the subtitle was like, Hub retches. Hub retches again. Hub retches. Continue retching. That's what the subtitle
yep.
said.
I have to use it, too, sometimes for the pronunciation, but it's also, like, it also really helps because of the puppets' voices. Like,
yes,
voice
they can be
is,
a little
is,
bit too close together, despite the fact that they are, you know, all different people doing these. Several different actors.
Correct. In Hup's English, it's like the way he articulates his words, not like a full articulation. So it's really cool, you know, to hear that because, you know, they all have their own things.
By the way, Reeker, the new guy that they've hooked up with, who, just, you know, leads them on their way, he, for whatever reason, reminds me of the Avatar's Na'vi aliens.
Yeah, in the first one.
In all of them. I mean, all three Avatar films.
Well, it looks closest to like the original Avatar because, you know, as the movies progress, their style and everything has changed. So.
Oh, has it? They all look like blue cat people to me still in the third one, and I haven't even seen the third one.
I haven't seen the last one, but I did see the first two. But no, the styles as they progress, their civilization progresses too. But I digress. So we start off with Puck having air sickness. And being told, you know, that death hangs over the quest. This is a very hard quest. And Reek's like, hey, there's a storm coming. Just, you know, take shelter before it hits. And, you know, drops them off. And they kind of have to go to the Circle of Suns on feet. By the time they get to the base of the Circle of Suns, the storm hits. And this, the way the storm hits, it's completely crazy. It's like strong purple thunder and sand clouds, and it just comes rushing at them
mm-hmm.
with this fiery vengeance of doom. And Lore automatically, you know,
yeah,
shields.
Their friendly rock guy, who looks like, by the way, a skinny version of the rock monster, Gorak. Do you know who Gorak is?
The name sounds so familiar.
Gorak is the name of the rock alien in Galaxy Quest that the little cannibalistic
yes.
children are summoning to beat up on Tim Allen's captain character.
Yes.
They're like, Gorak, 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 Gorak. And they're like, what is Gorak? I don't know.
That's
it's vulnerable spot. It's a rock. It doesn't have vulnerable spots.
I still love Lore, though. So he
I don't know who's better, him or Rocky from Hail Mary.
No, I love Lore. I'm
no,
going with Lore.
Rocky is so much better.
I'm sticking with Lore.
Amaze, amaze, amaze.
So Laura grabs up, you know, obviously his favorite Gelfling, Rian, and then she's like, no, we can't do that. Those are our friends. So he turns back around, grabs up the rest of the group, while poor Puck hangs on by, I think it's his scarf, for dear life while climbing up this mountainside. Now Laura, like, skeets up this thing so, so fast and gets everybody to the top of the mountain and safe. And once they reach the top, some crazy-looking Skeksis appears, and they're all like, oh, God, it's a Skeksis. And he's like, don't worry. I'm just nuts. Oh, I'm also a heretic. Don't worry about it. So, and he gets really excited because he hasn't seen Lore in 379, it's like years, but it's called, oh, what do they call them? Trians?
Sure.
I think that's their unit of measurement for years. And he's like, I made him. I know what that is. So,
also, we also meet a character from the movie. Isn't this guy in the film? The big, whatever the hell he is,
the Mystic?
Yeah. Isn't he in the movie?
There's multiple Mystics, so oh. I can't remember if it's this Mystic in particular.
Okay, but we haven't seen this guy the entire show.
Correct. Okay. So
we'll that's get what to I mean. That. It's like this is a character again from the film, like our mother that we meet at the end of the episode again.
Correct. We've met a Mystic before. We met the Hunter's Mystic.
Oh, okay.
Because that's where Almadra was like, hey, go to the desert. You got to kill your other half, my homie. And she's like, she's like, you got to go now because you're so slow. Mystics have four arms. And I think it's like two legs, and they still move stupid slow. They're like the tortoises.
They're the other form of the so the Urskeks is the name of the species of the Skeksis and correct. The Mystics. These are the good versions of the Skeksis, and eventually the Skeksis turn into the giant, the light people, whatever the hell they evolve into in the film.
Correct. So this particular Skeksis. He's like, hey, I was branded as a heretic, and the Mystic, and you know, the Mystic is, I believe its name is Hugh, I couldn't hear it correctly.
Hugh Jackman?
I want to say it was Hugo. He's like, hey, this is my other half. Like, I'm here with myself, which kind of gives you the opening to, you know, the Gelfling finding out that the Skeksis and the Mystics are one. So, and he's like, oh my God, can you just move it a little bit faster? Because, you know, you have all those arms and no speed. So once they do that, and this is where my heart like shattered. He's like, hey, you know, I love you, Laura, but you know, it's time to rest, and removes the yellow stone from the back of Laura's throat. From here, we get a quick glimpse on the Skeksis summoning the Arachnid, which is like these, they're like spider-like, but they're not really spider-like. And I love the way that they conjoin because it reminded me of the hands in the labyrinth in the Oubliette. And they just form like this eyes and mouths and talking as Legion, all as one. And they're like, hey, you know, if you gather up all the Gelfling, we'll unband you. You can have your own place. Just come help us. And the Skeksis basically come up with the trap for them, while the Arachnid are like, hey, we'll trap the Gelfling. Just bring us your strongest, and we'll show you how we're going to trap them.
Yeah, those things reminded me heavily of the spider-like creatures in the Mandalorian Frog Girl episode when he has to transport the frog woman with the eggs that Grogu keeps eating.
Yeah, they're like, it's weird. Like, they're arachnid, but they're not arachnid.
And they're also sentient, too.
Yeah.
That's the whole idea
of Legion, yeah.
Yeah, they're incredibly sentient.
But, which is really cool. We end up seeing eaten by you know, one of the worms from her homeland. We're back at the Seven Suns, where she's hungry and she's just, you know, walking through the area and she's munching, and she goes to pick up a worm, and Rian's like, you might not want to eat that, you're gonna trip, because they use that to communicate with Thrawn. She puts it down, and we find out, you know, how Rian's very homesick for her people, considering she's a ground dweller and she's never really been to the surface. So that's a really good moment of vulnerability for her. In the quest is shown at this point the real history of Thra, how Thra came to be, what it stands for, and then they're told that the mystics in the Skeksis should be, you know, be one and not divided, as they have all been thought to lead. And then the Skeksis finally get to see that they go, they're over this crack in the ground, and they, that's where they actually talk, they talk about the darkening, the quickening, and how they're going to use that against their arachnid, basically revealing their plan that they're going to double cross them and not actually give them their freedom. They're going to use, you know, the sickness that's taking over the land and the creatures against them, because they're also susceptible to it as well. Now, so the desert tribe there, which I believe is, what is it, the sand and stone, come face to face with the hunter. I'm sorry, the desert tribe. The desert tribe, what is it, with Reek?
Mm-hmm.
The ones that, the tribe that airlifted our questing group over to the Seven Suns, come face to face with the hunter. You know, they're trying to resist. They're really not trying to give in here. But once one of their party members is killed, they're told where they are. And eventually he's like, hey, you're going to fly me over there because, you know, I got to go do what I got to do. And back at the Seven Suns, this is where they put on a little theatrical play with the help of our good friend Huck, and they explain that they came from another world, and when they came here, they met the Almadra, and you know, they were so enticed by the stone, but they also enticed her with tales of the stars and, you know, other planets and other worlds, and she really wanted to see that. So they built her the Ori in mm-hmm. exchange for the crystal, the right. crystal of truth.
Yep.
Well, these beings are like scientists. Obviously, they're otherworldly. They want to understand the magical properties of the stone. So they start experimenting on the crystal, and that's what ends up splitting them into two beings. Now, when they're split into two beings, there's, you know, the Skeksis and the mystics. You know, they bicker between each other because you're pretty much having an argument with two halves of the same whole. And this is how the darkening is created. Is because they were doing these experiments.
Have you read any of the Expanded Universe comics recently since we started this?
No, I have not.
Okay. I haven't either. They're kind of out of print and hard to find. But yeah, there's a whole Expanded Universe of what takes place after the show, before the movie still, because again, we're still like way far in the past from the events of the movie.
Yes.
This is like Knights of the Old Republic to Star Wars.
Pretty much. Within this storytelling, you know, like I said, they started the mystics, you know, trying to tell the Skeksis, hey, listen, we don't belong apart. We need to be as one. And the heretic Skeksis was like, yeah, trying to convince them, and they weren't having it. And which is why he's branded as a heretic. Now,
at least that's all they do to him, considering.
Considering their past, correct?
Yeah, I mean, God, what they do to the Emperor in the movie is pretty awful.
They just tear everything apart.
Yeah,
like
still the most terrifying.
On steroids.
Still the most terrifying scene in any children's movie. I consider what happens. I consider the Skeksis and what happens to the Emperor in the movie more terrifying than I do, let's say, like in Gremlins, which, by the way, recently there was a 2.5-hour cut of Gremlins shown to an audience in California.
Oh boy.
Yeah. This is a director's print cut. There's more movies out there coming out saying like the directors are being like, oh yeah, like my movie, you know, if you want to show the entire thing unedited, there's a reason why there's edits, people, but I digress. You know,
it probably got more and more graphic, but that's fine because I also love Gremlins.
Right. Well, true. There is more of a plot line with a couple of things in the film. Like for instance, Mrs. What's her face, the evil old bitch or whatever, who gets her comeuppance when the Gremlins finally kill her. But in the original plot line, it was quite a horror show, including like Gizmo turns into Stripe and the mom is killed.
Yeah, I love. See, Gremlins never scared me as a kid, so I'm really intrigued and want to see the extended cut.
Yeah, I don't know. Again, sometimes it's not always great when they do extended cuts. There's True. Reasons why films are edited for, you know what I mean?
But Curiosity Killed a Cat, so...
Unlike films like Rogue One, if you're unfamiliar, has a completely different cut of the movie. There's actual even footage in the trailer for Star Wars Rogue One that never shows up in the movie, and people are always questioning, what was that about? Like, there's actually... like a whole plot line of Jyn deciding whether or not she should just join the Empire or side with the Rebels. And that's not in the film at all.
Yeah, it was probably cut for good reason. So, but the Heretic and the Mystic, because I can't remember his name, so his name is just Heretic at the moment.
Yeah, that's fine.
They are the ones that forged the dual blade.
Oh, wait, hold on. I might have it in my notes. Skegra the Conqueror.
Yeah, but he just keeps referring to himself as the Heretic.
Yeah, but his real name, though, is Skegra the Conqueror. Skegra. I wrote it down from the subtitles. It's Skegrah the Conqueror. He was the Conqueror, and then he became a Heretic.
Correct. So him and the Mystic forged the Dual Blade, which has the power to unite the Seven Clans and defeat the Skeksis. So the Seven Clans, Seven Fires, which we have been told about before, joined in unity and bring, you know, everybody together as one. Because not only are the Mystics ones, but the Gelfling tribes are all one as well.
Correct.
Now, the Blade is in the Cave of Thra, which is where Dee is from. So she was able to solve that riddle really fast. And then we are brought to where the Stone and Wood tribe is, where the Mardra... is getting, you know, that Mordra of the Stone and Wood is getting an army together to go up against the Skeksis because, you know, the Skeksis are stealing people. And Mother Ordra shows up. She's like, hey, don't fight them. We need you. You're like the heart of everything. If you fall, we all fall. And she's like, yeah, too bad. So sad. We won't fall, but we're not going to let them go about continuing to kill and harvest our people. And to which later... let me make sure this is in this episode. Yes. So later, the Stone and Wood tribe is, you know, overtaken because the Arachnid do show up as, the princess, one of the princesses, Tara. And they're like, she's like, hey, step forward. Like, hey, this is not what your mom wanted. What are you doing? And she's like, I'm not Tara. And you hear the kind of unison of the symbiotic relationship that the Arachnid form with their hosts and let out all these tiny, tiny little spiders. And they jump on their face and have mind control, which the All-Mardra is also watching from a distance. And one of them try to jump on her face. But she's kind of like, what do you think you're doing? You eat my brain, you're going to die. Like, there's too much in there for you, little guy. But here, there's before that happens, they have to retrieve the dual blade and end the Skeksis' reign. So the hunter appears at the Temple of the Seven Suns, and the Mystic shoots the hunter, which also affects him because what you do to one happens to the other. Remember, they are one entity. And poor Puck tries to protect Dee and is thrown so far that he's unconscious. At this point, we don't know if he's alive or dead. And the Skeksis and the Mystic tell Dee, hey, take the stone, put it back in. I'm sorry, tell Rhea to put the stone back in Lore. So to resurrect him. And
Dee and Brienne are too similar. They should have like really colored them better, especially when they're together in the scene. It's really annoying. And yeah, it's not saying that all people of certain species look alike, but they look alike.
Yeah, they really do.
I mean, at least Brienne's got black hair, for God's sakes. And I guess one of the two girls, she's got like really blacked out eyes. You know what I mean? Which is, I guess that's how you can differentiate.
But they're ridiculously close.
Way too much. And Hub is not even a Gelfling. He's something else.
His face looks completely different.
No, he looks like a. He actually looks like a Muppet. He looks like a Fraggle. That's what that little guy looks like. The entire time I've been watching this, I'm like, oh, he looks like a Fraggle. he looks like the Dober Fraggle builder little creatures.
Yes, those guys.
What the hell are they called? Go on.
I haven't watched it since I was a kid. Do not ask me. But it was
Fraggle Rock came back on Apple TV.
Oh, I haven't watched it. I used to watch Fraggle Rock, Snorkels. Like,
yeah.
They came on right back to back. So.
They've gotten two seasons so far. The second season aired in 2026. So they are still
going with
this new Fraggle Rock show. Must be successful. I haven't watched it. I have Apple, but I should watch it because I like Fraggle Rock too.
I love Fraggle Rock. I'm going to have to watch it. Thank you for telling me. So, you know, the hunter and the fighter, you know, go at it. And he ends up scooping up the princess. And she's listen.
Real quick,
you need to
the new season. So they had a Christmas special on Christmas, and the new season is coming in 2026 sometime. They haven't aired it yet. But yeah, the first season was 22, second season was in 24. The Christmas special was this past December, so they are still going. So,
perfect.
Yeah,
watch it now.
Yeah, watch it. Apparently it's a big success.
So, you know, she's taken up and she's like, listen, while she's being carried away by the hunter, like, you need to go find the blade. Don't worry about me. And that's where we end, like I said, is where the Skeksis show up to Stone and Wood and mind control them. And the Al-Madra witnesses everything that is going on.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where we end off for episode 7, which brings us over to episode 8. So episode 8, like, this has been, like, all the action here is, like, starting to pick up. So I'm like, you really get engrossed in this. And, like, just the details real quick with the other one, like how I think I stated it before for a big giant rock creature, how fast Lore gets up those rock faces. And just I love the mechanics and the articulations of these Muppets. They have definitely grown from where the, you know, it started with the Dark Crystal to now. So that's always really cool to see. So in episode 8, Mother Orgra saves the spider, that I tried to attach to her face at the end of the last episode. She puts a little salve on it. She's like, listen, just because you want to eat my brains, you're still one of my creatures. I'm going to help you. It's going to scar, but too bad, so sad. Here's what you get. Paid a visit by Celadon and told... The Al-Madra is paid a visit by Celadon, which is the new Dark Al-Madra. And she is told to, that she should be good with the Skeksis and, you know, she can convince them to go easy on her. And she's like, yeah, no. Like, what? What are you talking about? And then we have a quick cut scene where the one Skeksis that I love, and I hate that I love him so much because I can never remember his name. He just makes these really high pitched, and I just love the weirdo.
Mm-hmm.
He convinces the two little podlings. I want to say that they're podlings as well. Their mouth is just sewn shut. He's like, hey, help me kill the commander, and I will give you your freedom eventually. He's like, just help me. We need to take him out. I'm tired of him. Just help me and I'll give you your freedom. And they agree. And then we're brought back to find out that our poor little Puck, he is alive. Just really, really hurt. He can't continue the quest, so he's going to stay at the Tower of the Seven Suns with the Heretic and the Mystic. And the Heretic and the Mystic show Rian and Deet a way to the tunnels to go retrieve the sword. And this is where we're introduced to the Breath of Thaw, which is pretty much hot air that moves through these tunnel systems, which is really cool because it makes a really nice sound. As Deet was talking about before, how she's very homesick, she's now very excited because this is a familiar territory for her. And then we go to where the Skeksis have the poor Gelflings that these arachnid had round up, strapped to chairs. And one of them's like, hey, like, I'm the one who told you of the uprising and where we were. Like, you can't sacrifice me. And they're just like, too bad, so sad. We want essence. And they drain these Gelflings so fast, and they're just like, "Woo, we're gonna go party and get drunk on essence." And a couple of the Skeksis are like, "I've had my sight back. Oh, my beauty's back," which just makes me laugh when she's like, "Oh, I'm beautiful again," because she looks worse than Angelica's doll. Like, she just has this thing on top of her head. And she does not look like she has improved anywhere in beauty at all. Usually, like, when you take an elixir or something in a show, they'll show, even if it's just a subtle rejuvenation property, there is no change. I swear to God, they're just drunk on their own ambition, and it's crazy. And then the general's like, "Hey, I don't feel anything. What the heck is going on?"
Day after we're recording this, by the way, is was yesterday was Free Comic Book Day. Did you have get a chance to get out there for a Free Comic Book Day?
No, I did not. I have been sick the last few days. I'm running a fever. Yeah. So I've been home with the kitty cat.
How do you have a fever when you're pregnant? That's got to be rough.
Sinus infection from
you can't
hell.
Take anything either. Also, can the fever affect the baby? Because sometimes, like, the body can treat the baby like an infection.
If my fever gets too high, I have to go in, but it's not, so my fever is not actually like the temperature. I'm just running really, really hot and I'm tired and my face hurts. It's all allergies because I have to go see the specialist to get my biologic shot. That's pretty much what it is. So I'm used to these fevers. It's just, I just want to sleep, which is perfectly fine. The doctor's already been called. As long as I'm not, like, vomiting, hot, cold sweats, my fever doesn't get above a certain thing, they're not too worried. I'm like, yeah, no, I'm just miserable.
Excellent.
And
good
sleeping.
Okay, that's good. It was all right. I think if you go to your local comic shop, there are still some great free comics out there.
Oh, yeah. Arash went and grabbed some the other day while he was in Texas, so that's cool.
Excellent.
Well, he's there now. So the Skeksis is giving the elixir, and I told you that, you know, they're drunk in their own euphoria and convoluted perception of essence and what it does for them. Celadon, which is the Almadra adjacent, the one who made her own crown that will forever remind me of the queen from Willow. She goes down there and she's like, "Hey, can you release stone and wood? Like, we'll give you, one person from each clan," because that was my mom's agreement. And she finds out that, no, they're not going to release anybody. And she tries to, you know, bargain a little bit more and compromise, and it continues to fail. And that's when the Skeksis go, pretty much just like, no, absolutely not. We're not giving you anybody. You're not getting anything. You guys are literally sheep. Your mother was the shepherd. You're an idiot. It looks like you watched your mom die. She was trying to warn you. You probably should have listened. We're getting exactly what we want. We're not giving you guys up. And they strip her like they did. Almost like they did. What was the name of the Skeksis they did that to again?
The Emperor in the movie. That's all I remember.
Yes, they kind of like strip her down, like, of all her clothes that make her kind of look similar to the Skeksis. Just strip her down violently and then drag her.
Remember, for children, everybody.
Yeah, and then drag her by her hair out of their chamber to be strapped down and drained of her essence. And that's the last time we see her in this episode. Now, Deet's friend... I'm sorry, Deets and Deet and Rian, you know, they fly down into her tunnel. Well, Deet is the only one with wings. Rian doesn't have any because that's not part of his Gelfling anatomy.
The way you just said fly down into her tunnel sounded way too dirty.
Fly down into the tunnels where they have the breath.
Oh, okay. All right. I was going to say, this is a family-friendly show on the Netflix, even though it doesn't really seem like it, with the fact that they are just, the way they violently strip these creatures, it's like some kind of weird, fucked-up sexual assault, in my opinion.
I think it's just to show the feralness. You know how vultures strip everything down?
Oh, yeah.
I think
that's
kind of like the symbolism here.
Yeah, that's just Jesus Christ.
But Dee and Rian fly down into the tunnel where the breath of Thra is, Chris, and finds that her home has been destroyed, and basically the only living person of her homeland that she finds is her brother. And she's like, you know, come here. She's like very excited to see her brother. And he's all, rah, we have won. And calls the arachnid. And then, you know, they run and they realize they run into one of the worms. And the worm is not acting how they usually do. Because if you remember when we first met Dee, everything in her homeland was very, you know, blue, had this kind of, you know, ethereal kind of a vibe to it. And these worms are usually pretty docile, but it's going crazy like the other creatures that we have seen affected by, you know, the darkening. And she's like, oh, my God, you know, they're being taken over. They're affected, too. And then the hunter shows up from here, and the hunter shows up barely alive to the Skeksis. And they're just like, you know, every Gelfling, I don't care how many Gelflings it takes, just pretty much revive him. And then we're scurried on back over to Rhiannon and Dee, where basically, you know, he called these creatures to come attack them because, you know, they're in the tunnels. Hold on. My notes are all over this. I apologize. You know, they're all over. Nope. I'm sorry. So from there, we end up with the Skeksis. And that's why I said, like, he's like, drain all of them. I don't care. We need to bring them back to life. And they see the sack that he brought, which has, the princess, I can't remember her name, in the cage, and she's brought to where the stone and wood are being held, and her sister Celadon is being held. And, like, her sister kind of starts blaming everything on her. And she's, like, she's the new Almadra, is not taking responsibility for anything. She's just blaming it on her sister.
The biggest problem I have with this is that the episode follows, I think the episode does a fine job, but we're focusing way too much more time on the Skeksis and their body rancor. Prophets don't quite reach its potential, than anything else, in the episode. The Chamberlain schemes to regain their place as the advisor to the Emperor, and the necessities that the general being removed from his post are all great and all, but it just, this becomes like more of a problem I have read with other people and talked to other people about the show, is they felt as though that the Skeksis are like way more involved on this show than they should be. And if possibly maybe that's just that's what their intent was. And maybe if this has gone for multiple seasons, like each season was supposed to be about a heavily focused on a different species of the planet. Kind of like this, someone relates this to like Avengers Infinity War, where that was very much from the perspective of Thanos most of the movie.
Right, yeah, they do rely heavily on the Skeksis, but the way that I was perceiving it is that they just wanted to show how nasty and calculating they were. Like, the Gelflings and everybody, they're smaller moving parts. Like, they're not really, like, too small, but they are smaller moving parts to the bigger picture, and I think they wanted to focus more on the damage and everything that the Skeksis were doing to the crystal and all the surrounding, and the surrounding things. Pulling focus from them.
Mm-hmm.
So they're touching upon them, but they're not touching upon them too much, if that makes sense.
Okay, gotcha.
At least that's how I'm doing it, because like once you get over to the movie, it kind of like segues that way, where it kind of focuses on all the Gelflings and everything else. So I think that's why this one's heavily Skeksis saturated, because the movie's not.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
I'm
waiting to rewatch the movie again after we do this, because then we will do a review of the film post this show, as one does follow the movie does follow the show. And unlike some other things that I've done on this podcast, the show would follow the movie, but this is where it is a prequel to the film.
Yeah, but I think that's why they did it, is because the Dark Crystal is heavily focused on the other creatures, and they wanted to establish the villainous nature of these creatures, as they're not so much the forefront in the movie, which makes sense. It's filling in gaps that they had in the movie. So, like I said, they're advised to drain as many Gelfling as possible to save the hunter. So the arachnid. So we're back with Dee and Rhiannon in the tunnels, right? And they're trying to get away from the arachnid. They end up in a small tunnel, and one of these little arachnid symbiotic things ends up on Rhiannon's face, and they're trying to get out, and then Deet's brother shows up, and she's like, and he's like, no, and the spider falls off, and they bleed him out to this big empty chamber, where once again we meet the puppeteer and arachnid, where they form eyes and mouths again to communicate with these two Gelfling, and they're kind of like, hey, what's up? What's going on? And they're like, we're dying, we're being affected, you know, by the darkening, and she's like, well, I can get, like, you're trapped down here, like, there is no way out, but we can get you to the surface. If you get us to the surface, I want you to release my people. Like, we'll help you if you help us.
Yeah, okay. The Zoom call timed out, so we got to make the plots, you know, when we do go over the episodes, just a little shorter.
Well, there's a lot to go over, and I thought we had time. It's usually an hour.
No. No, we've never recorded for an hour.
Oh.
Yeah. So,
Where did you hear me leave off?
I would have to go back and listen to everything. Where were you in your notes?
I was where Deet was given the power for the tree.
Okay, then why don't we wrap it up?
Okay, do you want me just to go over that real quick and then just call it a day?
Yep.
Okay, Deet is then given power from the Century Tree, which she then uses to purify one of the worms, and upon doing so, looks like she takes part of the quickening on herself. Her eyes kind of go purple and haze over, and she loses consciousness, but while she's cutting in and out, you can see that Rian is climbing up out of these tunnels to bring her back to the surface.
Cool. Awesome. So that's all the notes we have for this episode of the Dead TV Podcast. We are going to be wrapping up the show in the next episode.
Yes.
Right. Why don't you give away where people can find you, Chandra?
You can find me on Instagram under Blunderland. That's BLUNNDERLAND.
And you can find me over on the RadioHorror.com website, as well as you can send me an email, thatradiohorror@gmail.com. And you can check out any of the other shows that I do here on the Radio Horror Network, such as the Vampire Movie Minute Podcast, where we are currently covering Blade. And we'll be back in just a few weeks with the last episode covering of the Dead TV Podcast covering Dark Crystal Age of Resistance. Don't forget to leave us reviews on anywhere you happen to listen to podcasts, please. Thank you, everyone.